Good morning. Welcome into In Focus on News Radio KMAN. Today we're talking Manhattan Housing Authority. We got three guests joining us here, including the new executive director of the Manhattan Housing Authority. His name is Aaron Estabrook. You might know him. He's a Manhattan City Commissioner. Good morning, Mr. Estabrook.
Good morning, Brandon. Thanks for having us.
You bet. Our other guests include Mandy Thomas, Assistant Executive Director. Welcome, Mandy.
Good morning, Brandon. Thank you.
And Patrick O'Neill, Public Housing Manager with the Housing Authority. Good morning.
Morning.
Certainly is a pleasure to have you. We'll start first off with the new news here, and it was recently announced that Joanne Sutton was retiring after 33 years as the executive director. Mandy, Patrick, you kind of give us a little bit of feedback on what she meant to the Housing Authority after three decades. I mean, that's a long time for anyone to serve.
Yes, that's an extremely long time for someone to serve in the area of the Housing Authority, for sure. She's been a true asset to the Housing Authority. She started in May of 1987, and I think she came in as an administrative secretary. A couple years after that, she obtained her public housing manager certification, which was kind of a big deal back then in the public housing realm. It kind of meant you knew your job and you knew lots of information about the Housing Authority. She then went on to get her Housing Choice Voucher Specialist certification as well. And I believe that was in 2011. She was instrumental in helping with the gardens at Flint Hills when that was built. I believe it was finished in 2005, and she came on as the ED in 2005. And she was very instrumental in getting that finished. She was also very instrumental in the Flint Hills rehab that took place, and that was converting 60 units of our public housing, and we actually sold them, and they were converted to low-income housing tax credit, and it was a mixed finance development. So it still has public housing units. There's 30 out there, and then there's 30 tax credit units as well. Probably the biggest thing for her was the apartment towers rehab that took place between 2014 through 2018. That was almost a $6 million project to get that accomplished, and it literally was gutting the entire building. And she was also, she approached the city of Manhattan during the rehab. We had to stop the rehab at one time because there was water coming in through the windows, and we weren't funded for new windows with HUD. And also during that time, we noticed there were some sewer issues as well. And so she approached the city of Manhattan and got a $1 million bond from them just to finish the project. So that was a huge undertaking for her. It seems like, you know, when she became the ED of the Housing Authority, there was just a lot of rehab things we had going on at that time, and she was definitely the key staff member pushing those through. She has assisted other housing authorities. If their ED should walk out the door, she's the first one to step in and kind of assist the new ED at that housing authority. She's been involved in numerous committees at the state level for the National Association of Housing and Redevelopment Officials. She's also served at the Southwest region with that as well, and also has served at the national level. So, but with 23 years of experience and with being here 20 years for myself, it's definitely a huge accomplishment for someone to stay in the housing realm for 33 years. So we greatly appreciate Joanne's service to the Housing Authority, and she is a true asset to the community as a whole.
Well, Patrick, what was your relationship with Joanne over all these years?
Well, Joanne had been here 15 years when I started, and I can still remember walking into the office and Joanne being the first person I met and being a little bit intimidated at that point. But over the years, I feel like Joanne helped me grow a lot in my position. I was active in the NARO organization also, and Joanne kind of took me under her wing with that, and I really appreciate that. So just over the 15 or 16 years that I've known her, she's just been, besides being a great supervisor, a boss, and director. Also just a very good friend and helped me a lot along the way. So I really appreciate that.
Well, Aaron, I know you got started here recently. It sounds like you have some pretty big shoes to fill. What's that pressure like?
Yeah, I mean, for one, I think maybe the listeners are also wondering, you know, what is all involved in the Housing Authority? And I think as you think about the towers, as Mandy mentioned, or the Flint Hills improvements that are up on Kimball and Manhattan Avenue, you think, you look around our community and pretty much everything that has to do with public housing or even Section 8 has Joanne's imprint on it in a way that's pretty impactful. She's definitely got some big shoes to fill, and I'm just the new guy. I'm starting fresh, so.
Yeah. Well, and obviously this is an issue that's important in a transit community like Manhattan. What do you guys see as some of the areas where the focus needs to, I guess, shift a little bit here as we get into kind of a post-pandemic era? I know we're not quite there yet, but we will be soon, hopefully, and all the financial struggles that we've seen over just the past year.
Yeah, so I think we're going to be refocusing our core values and goals around looking towards the future and making that technology gap. There's been a technology gap in all of HUD. It's not just our housing authority, but one thing the pandemic has done is forced more sluggish entities of government to move quickly to meet those needs so they can continue to serve the residents or the people in the community and communicate with each other like we are now on Zoom. This has changed the dynamic, the thinking around public housing. And so with that, we're going with the flow on that, changing some of our, updating our mission, our goals, making it more people-centric, having some flexibility, and updating things that are digital. Our application process should be updated or parts of it online by the time listeners are hearing this. So we are moving quickly. But I think that as much as I was eager to pull things forward in technology, what has been the best part of the pandemic is the fact that that COVID has pushed so hard for people to find those solutions. So it's pretty easy for me to say we need to do these things at this point.
All right, we had talked so much about here at the local level, the need for partnerships. And for those who don't know much about the Housing Authority, how important are partnerships to you guys? Maybe that's a question for Mandy.
Yeah, well, I think Mandy and I are going to continue to, let me back up and say that HUD has, they fund certain aspects of the Housing Authority, and they do that in sometimes a prorated fashion. But one thing that is always greatly underfunded is resident services. So those community partnerships that exist are where we're really going to have to lean on. And I think Patrick and Mandy both dealing with the people that live in our buildings, our neighbors here, they have many things that they need to rely on in the community that are beyond just housing to reach their goals. And so that's a two-way street. We can help with housing, but there's so many things that our folks need to also tap into with the community. Maybe Mandy or Patrick, you want to elaborate on any of those things?
Sure. I would totally agree with Aaron. When it comes to the Housing Authority, partnerships within the community are definitely essential. We deal with individuals that have disabilities. We deal with individuals that have mental disabilities, and just finding that connection for them is vital for them to live on their own. And, you know, when it comes to HUD, we don't always receive enough funding sometimes. And so if we can partnership with other agencies to kind of fill that gap, would be extremely amazing for our residents.
You know, I always hear about a kind of a lack of housing in our community, and it's not just Manhattan. It's a lot of communities around the Midwest. What kind of barriers exist right now for folks who maybe don't have the means to afford, you know, good housing in our community that maybe we're just not aware of here?
Patrick, you want to talk about maybe some of the applicants, types of maybe things that you, trends that you're hearing or seeing as over the last couple of years?
Sure. We do have eligibility criteria and screenings that we have to do, and sometimes that can be an impediment, but there are some things that we don't have a lot of choice on as far as regulations. Other issues that a lot of our applicants have, they may have had past landlord history issues, and like we talked about earlier, they may need to be in connection with some services in order to be able to retain their housing. We do have to kind of balance the different needs of all of our residents, and there are some times where we need to access some other resources, and sometimes it's difficult to get those to some applicants. So that can be a bit of an impediment. There will always be the issue of availability throughout Manhattan, and that's, I think, we do have some housing that's, you know, always being constructed, but as, you know, the city, of course, always wants to, you know, hopes to expand, and we get more people into the area, then, you know, it's always kind of a cycle of, you know, growing demand, and then you fill that demand, and you have more demand, so that's always a factor also.
You're listening to In Focus on News Radio KMAN. We'll continue our conversation with guests from the Manhattan Housing Authority after this.